Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Welcome to the Middle Ages show. This is because last week we had an argument about when middle age begins.
It wasn't an argument, was it?
Well, we shall see.
I have facts on my side.
I feel like we need some Monty Python music.
I understand what you're saying.
I mean, Tony, we can take your shoes off so you can count that high, but I mean, it's okay. We can count this.
To the Middle Ages show, because we're going to talk about when middle age begins, because it turns out that middle-aged men smell the worst, apparently, of any particular group of any particular people.
But couldn't you just say men? I mean, why do you really got to say middle age?
I really think if you think about it, Rick, men start to smell better as they get older.
Like cheese?
Men smell like cheese. Okay, I can accept that.
There are so many jokes there.
Thanks to our producers at True Talk Internet Radio, and a special radio wave to those hardworking staff at the MSU Ronald G. Eglin Space Science Center. Now with me to discuss middle age, and certainly whatever else occurs that they think is more important than that, from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, extraordinary assistant professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Extraordinary. Thank you.
And from the University of Kentucky Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, the extra...
Yeah, not Rick extraordinary, Phillips. But more like extra. Yeah, I knew where you were going with that.
So talk to us about how you access Health Matters on the internet.
No.
Okay.
I'm just kidding, Tony. You can get the audio of the show at wmky.org. That's right. You can go there. You can find Health Matters. There's a list of the most recent shows. And in that little show summary, you'll also find a link to the audio. Click on that. You can listen to each and every show, at least the most recent ones. After that, we would love for you to interact with Health Matters. And to do that, just jump over on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/HMRadioShow. There you will find our fan page. We didn't call it a fan page. I think Facebook calls it a fan page. So I'm trying not to sound like the
egomaniac
overlord, whatever. You know, we didn't do that. That's their name. But certainly it is your way to interact with the show. Leave us a message. That message could be some feedback. It could be a request for a show, or it could be, hey, what was the last time you talked about so-and-so, and what was that content? I mean, it could be just about anything. I like to give everybody the opportunity to provide feedback directly on Tony because, we have our thoughts, but you can confirm them for us. So it's certainly where you do that. Go to facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, 7 Foods to Avoid at All Costs. That's right. We're giving you feedback on foods.
Is one of them broccoli?
No.
I like broccoli. I shouldn't give it a hard time, but I know lots of people who don't.
I'll give you some background. I mean, you've always been told to chew your food, but these Health Matters is telling you to eschew these 7 foods.
Nicely done.
Thank you very much. This was a feed that I get into my inbox on my email from a group called MD Links. And I saw this, 7 foods to avoid. And I said, oh, great, here it is again. We're talking about kale and, how we should all be vegan. But actually, this made a lot of sense to me. And I thought it was worth bringing to Health Matters to talk about it. Their number one food to avoid is processed deli meats. Now, remember the Health Matters rule. If your meat comes in a geometric shape.
Symmetrical,
a sphere, a cube, a dinosaur, a circle, any of those
dinosaurs
things.
Dinosaurs aren't symmetric.
No, they're not.
If your food is shaped like a dinosaur, go ahead and eat it. It's a dinosaur. If you can get it down, go ahead and have it.
Bite-sized dinosaurs, teddy bears, that sort of stuff.
Was that like an animal cracker?
Yeah, it's like a gummy, that sort of stuff. Now, if it comes in a specific shape and they're all shaped the same way, this is a problem. The main difference, the reason they mention this, preservatives are a big, big problem. The sodium levels in processed meats are around 400 times higher, according to Navid Salah, who's the author of this. He's a physician and compiled this for MD Links. 400 times higher than in unprocessed meats. There was a European prospective investigation into cancer and nutrition. 450,000 people who didn't have cancer, didn't have heart disease, and they found a moderate positive correlation between processed meat consumption and mortality. Again, with that many people, this is as good as you can do in terms of an observational study. Now, red meat is a problem. Red meat is higher in fat. It is high calorie. It is also worse for the environment. The processed meats are the ones that seem to be actually associated with a higher overall mortality. No similar effects not observed with poultry. Researchers estimated 3.3% of deaths observed in the study could have been prevented if participants ate fewer than 20 grams per day. That's a tiny amount of processed meat. Although unprocessed red meats are neutral for cardiovascular risks, better options such as fish, nuts, legumes, fruits, and veggies. Number two, ramen noodles.
Really?
Yeah. You know, first of all, ramen noodles are the poor man's food. Just pure and simple.
Boy, don't hold your punches there, Tony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these things are cheap. This is the diet of college students. This is a diet of people, again, we're working at the free clinics. We see a lot of people who are using a lot of ramen noodles. It's a nice filler. It will make you full when you may not be able to afford anything else. It will make you full. The problem is they're high calorie. They have an enormous load of sodium. So there is a risk of what they call metabolic syndrome, which leads to diabetes, liver damage because of the preservatives in the noodles, and an increased risk of heart failure. And I did take care of a patient at the free clinic whose heart failure was very clearly triggered by the fact that he was consuming large amounts of ramen noodles. And you're talking about 2,000 milligrams of sodium is our recommended daily amount, maybe a little less than that according to the cardiologist. You're looking at 1,000 or 1,200 in a single serving of ramen noodles.
And there's probably more than one serving in a packet.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
And again, you're trying to get full.
You guys are bringing me down. This is terrible.
He's just getting started.
Yeah. You're going to love number three. I'm going to give you number three.
If it's peanut butter, I'm leaving.
No, peanut butter's number seven.
Good. I can stay a little bit.
Number three, donuts. My wife just can't believe people would eat donuts. I happen to think they're tasty, but... she has kept me from eating donuts, and I haven't had a donut in a long time.
No, you sneak them, don't you? You do. You sneak them at a meeting,
right?
A
but
conference.
I haven't been able to sneak one.
Yeah,
in a long time.
They have one out at a meeting.
One
I guarantee
single
you.
Glazed donut from Dunkin' Donuts, 14 grams of fat, 22% of your daily intake.
I'm going to ask St. Clair Catering if you actually eat any of the food in the rooms.
6 grams saturated fat equal to 30% of your daily intake. It would take the average person 70 minutes of walking at 3 miles an hour to burn off one glazed donut. And nobody eats one glazed donut.
So what you're saying is you didn't eat one.
I'm saying I did not eat one. I am very proud of myself, and the fact that my wife keeps a very, very close watch on me and makes fun of me. All this helps me not to eat donuts, and
mm-hmm.
I don't.
Yeah, okay.
That's our sponsor, the 7 Foods to Avoid at All Costs. We'll have more in our next fractional portion. Now, this is from Merriam-Webster. Middle age, the period of life from about 45 to about 64.
So we really, truly think somebody's going to be 128.
No, it's not half-life. It's midlife.
So what is mid on a scale?
It is the middle
section
of your life.
What is mid of 10? What is the midway of 10?
It is the middle of your adult life.
It's not 5.8.
Middle of your adult life.
It's not 6.4.
Yeah, but you take away the first two of 10 because you're an infant.
Yeah. So it's the 25th percentile to the 75th percentile.
Right?
You know, what's interesting is I just told you, Merriam-Webster defined this. What's really interesting to me is this term, middle-aged, came up during the Middle Ages. It was first known use was in 14th
century. Back then it was
7. Maybe.
Well, I don't know if the definition changed.
Do we
really, the word has come up. For 1,000 years, we've had a middle age, and there is a standard definition, according to Merriam-Webster, and you're arguing with
you
that.
Believe
I don't know how
64
you do that.
Is middle-aged. You believe that in your heart of hearts.
It's sure. The 75th percentile.
Yeah. 25 to 70. I like that. You're an adult at 20. You're a young adult for the first 20 years. You're middle age for the next 20 or 25. And then you're a senior citizen. Give me another set of definitions. I'll listen to them.
No.
But that's what Merriam-Webster
thinks. We can't use mathematical terms and not adhere to mathematical principles. Why?
All right, Rick. You define middle age the way you want to define. I can't believe you're doing this.
What? The middle is something between the top and the bottom, right? It's somewhere between the high and the low, the mid and the max. It's somewhere in, or the minimum and the maximum. It's somewhere in the middle, right?
So,
it's
so the how middle. Does this not follow that definition?
How is 64 mid, the middle point of your life?
At 64, you expect, first of all, people who retire at age 65 have, on average, 15 more years of life.
Great. So they really didn't start life until 49. So they didn't start their life
until
49.
No, they were young adults before then. The middle part of their adulthood is
the first after they turned 20, what were they, Rip Van Winkle? I mean, how can 64 be middle life?
So I'm going to move on. I think most of
because you can't win.
Most of our radio fans have given up on Rick, and they're on my side. I can sense that. I mean, look out there. Look at the audience. You know what? I'm right on that.
The ones that are middle aged have hearing aids.
Now we're back to what we were talking about August 8th. This was from Ann Bauer. She's a Minneapolis-based essayist and playwright, and she wrote this in the New York Times. And I brought it up not because I agree with it, but simply it was an interesting idea. The title of the article she wrote for the New York Times, Do Older People Have a Different Smell? And she and her husband lent their house to an older couple. Spotless house when they got back, completely clean. There was gifts there and so forth. But there was this odor, and she described it as slightly stale and sweet, like the musty first whiff of strawberries in a cardboard box. So if you want to know how old people smell, you basically go to the farmer's market, and there in the cardboard box is
that
smell. That's
not how I think old people smell at all.
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I like strawberries. If old people smell that way, I'm fine with it. But at any rate, so she talked to a group of women writers, 40 to 70, and got different responses. The younger ones said, yeah, I know what old people smell like. The older women said, this is ageism, and some people actually took offense that there might be a separate odor. She went to Monell Chemical Research Center asking them, do older people have a separate smell? And there's a professor there, 46-year-old biologist, Johan Lundstrom, who said they took samples from the underarms. This is how this research is done. Samples from the underarms of people from ages 20 to 95, and they presented those samples without giving any background information to 41 participants who ranked them on the intensity and unpleasantness. And those people could assign labels to the odors of the older people, but not the younger people, the 20-plus people, whatever age Rick thinks that is. Then there was a second person from the same institute who said, no, we've done gas chromatography. We cannot find any particular chemicals that are unique to older people. We think that that's silly. The Japanese have a name for the odor of older people, and they have some soaps that can get rid of it. The overall recommendations were, if you are an older person, and these people said, stay active, air out the house frequently, wash your clothes, even if it doesn't look, even if they don't look dirty, and that's it. The thing came up when we started talking about the fact that most people agree that middle-aged men have the most offensive odor. Now, we've got some recommendations ourselves on how to handle that odor in our next fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
And I, in the twilight of my middle age, I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Welcome to the Middle Ages show. We are specifically talking about those people from age 40 to age 45 to 64, according to Merriam-Webster and most of the civilized world. For the second time, our sponsor, 7 Foods to Avoid at All Costs, will remind you of the three that we touched on our first fractional portion. Number one, processed deli meats, 400 times the sodium that you see in unprocessed meats. Red meats can cause some problems, a slightly higher risk of cancer, but these processed meats, overall mortality is higher, according to the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition. 500,000 people. And they found a higher overall mortality with processed meats. And again, these, to let you know, this is the bologna, this is the salami. These are meats that come in geometric shapes. The second one was ramen noodles. Again, a lot of preservatives in this, high calorie, minimal nutritional value, lots of salt, problems with heart failure, problems with liver damage, weight gain. There's a condition called fatty liver they may provoke as well. Not a good choice. Third one, donuts. The average person would have to walk 70 minutes at 3 miles an hour to burn off one glazed donut. Next up, number four, movie theater popcorn. I don't know why the rules of nutrition do not apply to movie theater popcorn.
Because they're not as bad as movie theater nachos.
You have such a different perspective, Rick. I really like this. You're probably right. I
personally think from now on I'm going to go get the movie theater size box of Mike and Ike's. Because that's got to be better than the buttered popcorn.
I think so. All right. First of all, it's expensive. But that's the way it is in a movie theater. But here, they took Regal Cinemas. I don't know why. Just because. 20 cups of popcorn go into that thing. 1,200 calories. A gram of sodium. 60 grams of saturated fat. That's before they put on the butter topping.
So what is it after?
I think the machine broke. Honestly, and the idea that, you know, well, I'm in a movie, so it's okay to do that. I mean, that is probably it's a bad idea for six people to share a large tub of popcorn at the movie. And I will tell you, I have never seen a large group of people sharing the popcorn. You know, you have popcorn anywhere else, you get a little bag. For some reason there, you think, fill up the trash can. You know, I'll take it in with me and I'll just make
I assure you, if you and
movie.
I ever go to a movie, we've been together for almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
You ain't getting me and my popcorn.
I know.
I'm not sharing with you.
I understand that. My friend Phil went to the Mexican restaurant, ordered the El Presidente, and says, I don't believe in sharing. He was a minister. He was actually a minister, and he ordered that and said that. I will never forget that. And I thought, well, you have just declared yourself. I mean, he's got a large family. He's got three kids. But he, when he got the El Presidente, was not interested in sharing. And in the same way, Rick will not share his popcorn, and I respect that. I would not share either. I don't want
well,
your
I'm
hand in my
popcorn.
Popcorn
now. I'm getting
I don't
Mike
want my
Ike's.
Hand in your popcorn. Okay, so you've moved to Mike and Ike's.
You've already scared me away.
I would say there's
clearly better food at the movie theater.
Yeah, the odds are anything is better than that just because of the volume you've got.
What about a thing, a big thing
of
cotton candy?
Of
that's probably good, huh?
Well, it's not 20
it's
cups.
Because they sell it here. Yeah. They sell it here, this one. It's air and sugar. Yes.
Yeah, air and sugar. And the air is actually pretty nutritious compared to the sugar.
Yeah.
It's quite filling, I might add.
Balance it out a little bit.
That's right. The problem is, you know, afterwards you're so sticky.
So do either one of you two
then you
actually
want something salty, so you eat the popcorn. So that's what happens with
do either one of you two actually go to the movies?
No.
Yeah, I do. We do.
And
we,
do you get popcorn?
No.
Ever?
It's like a once a year thing.
Back when you were middle aged?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my middle age.
Back in the middle ages.
With popcorn. but is popcorn standard for movie? I mean,
it is. It's pretty standard. Yeah. No, yeah. I always have popcorn. But that the movie theater I went to was in Miami. I was on a vacation. And
right.
It just happened to be one of these movie theaters that's like they serve you, that you can get a dinner. You can actually get food, real food. So I think I had a chicken sandwich.
Ah. Okay. Speaking of Miami, number five, raw oysters. They munch on ocean sediment, which is pretty much, according to this author,
have either of you two actually had oysters?
No.
We had, our daughter went to Mobile, Alabama, and there is, I think, Wenzel's oysters there. And this is a Mobile tradition. And I skipped them. I cannot eat anything. When I was
in the U.S. Army, I was stationed in Louisiana.
Right.
We sat in New Orleans on a place called the Jackson Brewery, and it overlooked the actual Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get oysters for 10 cents a piece.
And so you got very good. And they
I
were
don't
raw?
Have to tell you how many I had.
They were raw?
Of course.
Wow.
Can't
oysters.
Do it.
They had crackers and cocktail sauce.
Can't do it.
U.S. commercial bivalve mollusk harvest economic value in 2011. Why they put this in? I guess they couldn't get a more recent value. $1 billion. 153.6 million pounds of oysters. They are filled with bacteria and viruses. That can result in vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal cramps, may last a few days. Now, here's the problem. This is always in the medical literature. A couple of times a year, somebody eats raw oysters. Maybe they've got diabetes or liver disease, or maybe they've got an arthritis, and they're taking one of those medicines that you hear about on TV. and they get something called Vibrio bacteremia. And this Vibrio vulnificus is a nasty, nasty germ in oysters, leading to bacterial infection, shock, and sometimes people die from that. Cooking oysters does not necessarily kill all the bacteria, but at least it is a start. And you cannot look at the oysters. It's not that the oysters, if we leave them out in the sun or if we don't eat them promptly or anything, raw oysters, fresh from the freezer or refrigerator or wherever, they have bacteria and viruses in them. That's what they do for a living. Number six, and this is an important one, I think, sugar-sweetened fruit juices.
Specifically fruit juices.
Yeah, well, the point they make is, I mean, you know that sugar-sweetened soda, sweet tea, has loads of sugar, no nutritional value, and you don't even fill up with it. You don't even know you're taking those calories in. It turns out, just because you've got some fruit juice along with the sugar, it does not make it any better. Survey more of 13,000 adults ages 45 years or older. These are middle-aged adults, Rick. Each additional 12-ounce serving of fruit juice, independent of other sugar-sweetened beverages, associated with a 24% increased risk for all-cause mortality. Now, you can only go so far with these numbers. If it is 24 per glass, basically four glasses of fruit juice, and you're dead. So, I don't know about 24%, but I will tell you the benefits of the fruit and the fruit juice do not outweigh the problems with the sugar. And my diabetic patients, fruit juices, orange juice that comes from a can, this thing really just will take your diabetes out the roof. They said steer clear of fruit juice unless it's freshly squeezed. And basically, you reconstitute from concentrate, you're going to get a load of sugar. And then just for Rick, number seven, reduced fat peanut butter.
Well, that's good because that stuff's nasty.
Yeah.
Full-strength peanut butter.
What they do is they put in basically cornstarch and sugars in place of the monounsaturated fats in peanut butter. So it is reduced fat, but it actually is less healthy than regular peanut butter. So that's the seven foods to avoid. I thought there were some things worth discussing in that. Other people may disagree.
How many of those can you say eat and be okay? Because, you know, while I did give up oysters years ago, there's still a couple on those lists that scare me.
Well, and these are, they're absolutely right. In terms of nutritional value, almost zero. In terms of risk, more than most foods you would eat. So this is not simply a not good food. I absolutely agree with them. These are lightning rod type foods. Just try to avoid them at all costs if you can. Now, I think the thing you do is you say, all right, I want to remember my youth once a year, two times a year, or something like that. And you just, you know, if you don't have underlying illnesses that these things might tip over, I can see it then. But frankly, there is just no good time to eat raw oysters, movie theater popcorn, ramen noodles, donuts. You know, it's just at no point can you say it's all right. It probably doesn't matter. It matters anytime.
So, you know, there's a place in Lexington called Bad Wolf Burgers.
Okay.
You know, they sell a burger that's actually, the bun is a donut. Bun is a Spalding's donut.
And why?
Doesn't that sound just awful?
Yes.
I mean, I get that some people really like it. I don't like to mix my hamburger.
The original idea of the sandwich was to put something around those things so you didn't get that stuff all over your fingers. And a glazed donut does not serve the purpose of the outer covering of a sandwich. It's, you know, just go ahead and eat the meat if you want to get the stuff all over your fingers. Why put a coat them with sugar?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't understand that whole sweet thing with that, because the same thing about getting like the bread is infused with syrup.
Yeah. Or the sausage or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah. And I'm thinking that is awful.
If you do this, especially if you give your kids donuts and your kids are used to donuts, then you've changed their eating habits for most of their life. You know, they will remember that. They remember their childhood fondly. Most do. And they're trying to get back to the things that you teach them.
So what teach your
children to eat.
What guilty pleasure did your parents teach you that you can't let go of?
Oh, my gosh. My parents, it was the worst. We had meat every meal. We would get big cans, Charles chips.
Oh, yeah, Charlie's chips.
And had them around. I mean, I grew up in a nutritional cesspool. I had a working mother, a working father, and we were in charge of our own meals.
I absolutely know what your Christmas present is going to be because Cracker Barrel sells those now.
All right, but back to Rick and his body odor problem. We have Terry
put that off as long as I can.
August 16th. This was Reuters, and this made me cringe. It's called Skin 2. That's Skin Roman numeral 2. designer Rosie Broadhead, and it has healthy probiotic bacteria that can reduce the smell of your body odor. And this is what I was trying to get to last week, and so we've got to talk about skin too. It's not the sweat on your body that causes body odor, it's the bacteria. So we've incorporated healthy bacteria into the suit to enable a healthy microbiome, which will help reduce your body odor. So you put on this suit full of germs in order to not smell bad.
This thing's going to fly off the shelf.
I get creeped out in a hot tub.
She developed the garment as part of her postgraduate degree. She worked with Belgian microbiologist Chris Callewaert, I believe, of Ghent University, to develop Skin 2. He gave her the healthy probiotic bacteria commonly found on skin, done extensive research on this. So they're going to commercialize it, and they hope to have a sportwear range of germ-treated suits.
How long before that's in your deodorant?
The sustainability was another one of its benefits. If you reduce body odor, you don't need to wash this suit so much.
That's terrible. I mean, terrible.
Well, it's full of sweet-smelling germs.
Nowhere does it say it's sweet-smelling.
Can I, for the record, state I don't want to be a part of this conversation?
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I understand. You know,
there's nothing sweet about any of this.
Yeah. We've got to come to terms with our biome. I understand that. You know, the idea that you're going to get Lysol spray and eliminate 99.9% of the germs in your house or in your yard is absurd. There are trillions. You eliminate 99.9% of them, and there are still billions. And so you're not going to sterilize these surfaces. The best you can do is to temporarily reduce the germ counts on them. In the same way, you can't sterilize your skin. But I am not ready to embrace a germ, just specifically germ-treated bodysuit. I don't know what kind of germs I have on my skin, but I'm rather fond of them. I don't need to introduce them to strangers.
But you do all the time.
When I shake hands with people, especially right before I eat, yes, I do. And you know how that creeps me out. I do not like to shake hands at the lunch table.
I know.
It annoys me. And I certainly don't want to put on a bodysuit that hasn't been washed in several days because we don't want to kill the wonderful
bacteria
growing
on it. Even if it's your bodysuit? Even if it's still your bodysuit? Only you have worn this.
No, these are standard. The probiotics.
Oh, you mean
here,
one of the ones you'd buy?
Yeah, one of the skin two things. It's got somebody's idea of what germs I should have.
How do you sell that? How do you package that? How do you keep the bacteria on it while it's on the shelf? Don't they die?
I don't know. I suppose.
I mean, doesn't bacteria have some kind of short span of life?
Sprinkle bologna
over it.
You'd
have to feed it or something.
Right, I mean, wouldn't they? I mean, if it was on the gross. If it was on the shelf for 3 weeks, wouldn't it die?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe it comes with like fish food. You just sprinkle some food on it.
You know, these are germs that grow on your skin. So once you put the thing on, these germs are very happy. They've got whatever it eats,
yeah,
whatever nutrition they need. They can get that from you.
I get
your
that.
Your suit.
So it feeds off you. So now it's a parasite. So this thing has now become
a parasuit.
But what about, what about the time it's leaving the manufacturer and getting to you? I mean, doesn't it have to go sit on a shelf somewhere or be sold over the internet in a warehouse? I mean, isn't there something with that?
Yeah, see, this it says in the article that it can survive an 86-degree Fahrenheit wash. So it's going to get hotter than that in the feeder on the highway.
Yeah. So I don't know. Either they grow
unless
or
they refrigerate
die.
It.
Who knows? So Skin 2, Skin Roman numeral 2, coming to a department store near you. Be on the lookout
yogurt.
For this wonderful product that will control your body odor with bacteria. I do want to take just a minute in our second fractional portion, talk about something a little more serious than that, because, boy, it took a long time to set up that article. Probably not worth it. This came from Eric Hoffer, who is a physician but also has a number of other titles. He is with the Laboratory of Computer Science at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. And he started a series at one of the journals that I read about America's healthcare system is broken, what went wrong, and how we can fix it. And he had several facts that I'm going to read apparently in a rapid sequence here in the time that we've got left for us to think about, to ponder about our healthcare system. And I've got, it looks like, about 7 facts on our healthcare system. First of all, asked to participate in a survey, half a million responses to his survey, and he looked at the tabulations. And when you look at the U.S. healthcare system, 3% felt it was very positive, 27% positively felt that we had a good healthcare system, 48% negative, and 22% very negative. So combined, 60% of the American population feels not good about our healthcare system. And then he talks about the history of our health system. After World War II and into the 1960s, most Western democracies, including the U.S., spent 6 to 8% of their gross domestic product on health care. In 1980, we were still at 8.5%, the same as Germany and the Netherlands. Now we are at 18%, probably going to reach 20% by 2025, compared to 10 to 11% of our what we call the European countries that we compare ourselves to. Twice the amount of our gross domestic product going to health care as those countries in Europe. Our per capita, per person in the United States, we're spending over $10,000 per person per year for health care. Switzerland, it's 31% higher than Switzerland, who is our closest competitor. And what do we get for that? He says a baby born in the U.S. in 2017 had a life expectancy of 78.6 years. 29 other countries had a life expectancy of more than 80. In fact, a child born in Havana, Cuba, had a better chance of living to age 2 than a child born in the U.S. Our risk of death in infants and children is 76% greater than average for our comparison countries, European countries, and other economic countries that are similar to us. 57% greater than children ages 1 to 19. And then here's the fact number 4. Of the 11 richest democracies, looking at the performance of their healthcare systems, the U.S. ranked last in access, last in equity, and last in outcomes. Maternal death rate in the United States, well, first of all, in Canada, it is 7.3 per 100,000. Japan, 6.4 per 100,000. We are 26.4 per 100,000. Our mothers, our pregnant mothers, are at risk for their lives, and our mortality rates are 4 times that of some of the other nations that we compare ourselves to. And then 6, and I've got this, 40% of collection items on credit reports are for medical debts among young people. That's the healthcare system we live in, and that's why it simply must change. We must change too, so we're going to take a break. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion. I'm the extra guy, Rick Phillips.
I'm extraordinary, Shelley Irving.
And I'm just Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Welcome to the Middle Ages show. Again, the Middle Ages defined as that period of time,
that irritates
period of
Rick.
Life, from 45 to around 64, according to Merriam-Webster and most of the civilized world. Our sponsor for the final time, 7 foods to avoid at all costs. Number 1, processed deli meats. If your meat comes in a geometric shape, that is the one you want to avoid. Number 2, ramen noodles. Number 3, donuts. 4, movie theater popcorn. 5, raw oysters. 6, sugar-sweetened fruit juices. 7, reduced-fat peanut butter. We explain why. If you didn't catch this, you can download our show and see an interesting conversation about why these are bad. Now, I'm moving pretty fast here because during the break, we had a actual
battle royale,
thought-provoking conversation erupt, and I wanted to make sure. Remember, we were talking about this. We are spending 2 to 3 times the amount of our gross domestic product of our comparison countries, 30% more than Switzerland, which is the second highest healthcare spender. For that, our life expectancy is lower than the others. We're dead last in access, in equity. Our maternal mortality is about 4 times that of many of the countries in Western Europe and of Japan, and our infant mortality is abysmal. Rick said maybe Cuba had a good year, but there was a year where the chances an infant would make it to adulthood were actually higher in Havana than they were in the United States. And this despite the fact we're spending all this money. I'll hit one more thing, and then I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to let Rick and Shelley talk about the things that they talked about during the break. In most European countries, notably Germany, people use more services than we do. It is not that we are blessed with an abundance of healthcare service and easy access. The average American saw a doctor 4 times a year in 2011, compared to an average of 6 times a year in the rest of the Organization of Economic Development countries. In the United States in 2011, there were 131 hospital discharges per 1,000 people. The average was 160 in our comparison country. So they're going to the hospital more, they're seeing the doctor more, but we are paying more money for less access. We do more procedures here. We are about 40% more Americans getting knee replacements and doing some high-end surgeries. But in terms of just getting in to see the doctor, we, in fact, perform worse for more money than they do. Couple of things to think about. One, our physicians, our healthcare professionals, get paid more than they do in these other countries. But we have, I won't make any excuses, they do. We have a higher level of administration than these countries do. In fact, our insurance companies take about 12% of the entire healthcare expenditure. And the hospitals spend about an additional 12% on billing and collection. So that's 24 cents out of your dollar do not go to provide you any health care. They are about billing, and they're about insurance and about paperwork. So those are some numbers that he put on our health care system, and seeing them back to back to back, as Rick said about peanut butter and popcorn, is very depressing. Once again, we've managed to come up with a very depressing show.
No, I think... While I'm not totally, I'm not trying to be completely contradictory to what they're suggesting here. I just think sometimes it's not easy to compare two countries. We cannot be compared to Sweden. I'm sorry. We just can't. We're too big. We're too broad. We've got more rural area in Texas than they've got with their surrounding two countries. They just don't have the same problems we have. The other thing, too, we have built a legal system that requires us to, you know, kind of take care of some things. And that, let's be honest, the legal and ethical issues that are navigated every day in a U.S. hospital add a good portion of cost to that. I mean, there is an expense associated with making sure you're meeting all the regulatory requirements. I mean, honestly, do we really think, I mean, have you ever actually read, there's a book out there, it's the National Fire Protection Agency, NFPA 99 relates to hospitals. It's a book like 500 pages long that tell you how you have to make that hospital safe. Fire extinguishers, widths of doors, access for wheelchairs. Are you telling me that every single developed country follows the same kind of building codes we do?
I hear what you're saying. And what Rick's saying, to his credit, when the hospital gets inspected, they use those criteria for inspection. So when he talks about fire extinguishers, if you do not have, if you do not meet those criteria, you fail the inspection. So these are not arcane
rules. And in America,
rules.
The Medicare doesn't pay you if you fail your inspection.
That's right.
And I think somewhere along the way, with all that regulatory stuff and all of the legal stuff that you've mentioned, Rick, I think we've lost sight of the patient. So we've gotten really good at making hospital, the facility safer. We've gotten good at protecting privacy of our patients. We've gotten good at protecting patients' information, but we've lost sight of the patient.
But I would respectfully, if it was Tony, I wouldn't do it respectfully, but Shelley, I'll do it respectfully. Since there was a point in time in practicing medicine where we started putting putting a temporary tattoo on the leg that was going to be amputated. There are things that we do that allow us, from a quality control standpoint, to ensure that we're a safer environment for a patient. That is not for the legal part of it. That's for the patient. Now, there are other side benefits, but we do all kinds of process changes in a hospital that are purely for the safety of the patient.
We do,
and that
but
costs money.
It does cost money.
We make sure people don't walk off with babies.
Right, but we still do have accidents. We still have people that walk off with babies. We still amputate the wrong appendage or operate on the wrong side.
Yeah.
But if we go back to looking at just people's health and their quality of life, that has clearly not gotten better. We've got more women dying in childbirth or from complications of childbirth. We should not have that.
Well, it's interesting. My take on that would be And again, this is not a detailed take, but I know on this radio show we have talked over the years about how a gynecologist is or an obstetrics physician is the highest risk category you can be in as a physician. Their malpractice insurance is off the chart expensive, so there's less of them. They don't go to rural communities anymore, so they're not delivering those babies anymore.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of things to that.
To your point, you know, those safe hospitals, the people I take care of in the free clinic can access those safe hospitals, so they're safe, but they are, in fact, out of reach of at least some of the people that I take care of. And you've said the same thing. The obstetrics care that we are so proud of due to the concerns about lawsuits is limited, especially in rural areas. They are losing obstetricians and losing the ability to deliver the babies locally because of concerns about the malpractice risk. And so what we are doing then is creating a healthcare system that is wonderful but inaccessible.
Right. I totally agree with that. But I think that is because of our societal issues, right? That is because America has chosen to be that country. We want to be capitalist, but we want to be socialist, but we want to be this. I mean, we want to be everything. Everybody here, that's why we can't agree politically right now. It's because everybody has their own vision of what we're doing, and we all think we're right, right? And we try to cater to everybody. So it's not Sweden. It's not Cuba. It's not these places where you can be dictatorial or you can have a smaller group of people to enact regulation or gun control or, I mean, some of these...
Enforce immunization.
Enforce immunization. Yeah, we are just a huge, fairly well-off country when you factor in some of the other... You know, if you say compare us to, you know, some of the African countries, you know, we're obviously... our poverty levels are still 15 times higher than what they'll ever have. So we're complex. We're hard. And no
and again,
piece of
I think you meant the European countries, right? Our poverty.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I meant European. Yeah. So I just think it's very difficult to look at these numbers and go, oh my gosh, Cuba's better than us. No, Cuba's not better than us. They're not. They're just not. Nobody's gonna get pregnant and just run off to Cuba because it's safer. Okay, it's just not gonna happen. Sorry, Cuba.
If you or someone you love has gotten pregnant and gone to Cuba, please contact us on our Facebook page just so we can prove Rick to be wrong. This will be a great day. Be glad to hear from any of you. Anyone out there right now, you may want to call WMKY, make a donation to the station and say, you know, I delivered my baby in Cuba, so there, Rick. So please, please see what you can do on this one.
All I'm saying is, this is a classic thing where we can skew statistics to say America is terrible. But it's not. It's not. We've got flaws. We've got problems. We've got to fix them. And we got to get past some of our personal problems that the whole country seems to be stuck in right now.
Yeah. The interesting thing, you know, we talked, Shelley and I talked about Ezekiel Emanuel and some of his concerns about the healthcare system and where he saw it going. His concern, again, if we go to Medicare for all, first of all, he feels that everyone should have access to the healthcare system in some way. But if we simply go to Medicare for all, Medicare just pays for whatever we're already doing, and we need to have better management of complex illness if we're going to be able to create an affordable healthcare system. So the next question is, well, what does this guy think? He started off by outlining what's wrong. His name's Edward Hoffer, and I want to see where he goes. He does quote one of my favorite healthcare economists, and I'm not an expert in this, but there was a guy named Uwe Reinhardt who recently passed, and we did a show about him, if you want to go back and look in the archives. This was a guy who was very sensible about how we can solve some of the healthcare problems. And he says a 2003 paper from Uwe Reinhardt, it said, it's the price is stupid while we're different from other countries. We charge more than the other countries to do the same thing.
I would say we charge more and require more.
Fair enough.
It's not only charge, we require more too.
Yeah. Now, you've got that, just the charges and the salaries. You've got the creeping increase in administration. You've got the malpractice and the legal issues. There are issues of access. We love technology. We have created a system where our citizens are held captive by the pharmaceutical companies. So there are a bunch of things that we all know are true. These are things that make the U.S. healthcare more expensive. Now, depending on whom you speak with, one of those things or another is going to be the chief problem. But I think we can condense it down to a handful of things where we know we could do better. and take advantage of all the spending. I'm actually still stupidly optimistic about this because since we do spend so much money, we have the resources if we will have the courage to use them properly. You know, right now the big fight is something called balanced billing. If you go to an urban emergency room, one where there's a plastic surgeon, and you have, and I'm using this specifically because this is apparently is where most of the surprise billing comes from, and they bring that doctor into the emergency room to stitch up your face or an area where cosmetics are very important. Most of those people don't participate in insurance or Medicare. They go cash only, and suddenly you get hit with a huge cash charge. Well, federal government has said, all right, we're going to make the insurance company rates the only thing that you can charge a person. And the physicians and hospitals are saying, no, you can't damp down our ability to charge what we want to charge. And so now there are some horrific TV ads. I don't know if you've seen this or not, where the ambulance pulls up with a critically ill teenager and the hospital lights are off and the hospital is dark. It is a devastating commercial. It runs very frequently on TV. And the idea there is if we don't allow these specialty doctors to bill what they want, the hospital will close down. And this was, I thought, a pretty reasonable thing, but it does take away doctors' ability to negotiate with insurance companies. And there is a huge fight going on right now. You're supposed to call Mitch McConnell and tell him what you think about balanced billing or about government rate setting is what they call it. And we will see these fights over and over again every time someone tries to restrict the flow of money into the healthcare system for any reason. So this is going to be a very, very difficult battle, I think, going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about it before. The only real solution are solutions that aren't enacted today. I mean, that don't become effective today. The only way to get some of the politicians to actually do the right thing is make the right thing happen in 10 years. That way they're out of office and they're not attached to it. And so, you know, I firmly believe that if we're going to do things like, and I'm speaking in general speaks, not necessarily healthcare, but everybody argues about term limits. We're never going to get term limits passed unless they don't start until 2028 or 2035. I mean, they're going to have to be phased in so that the current people will vote for them without losing their terms.
Now, Rick, as a middle-aged man, how do you feel about dumping all these things
angry.
Down on young people?
Very
like
angry.
Our producer, Shamari Mosley. She's a bright, intelligent young woman, and now we are just dumping our problems on her, whether it's health care or, as you said, term limits or pretty much anything, any political solution. This is – I don't know how we're going to do this. I think that just, you know, simply saying Medicare for all in my mind is not solving this problem. But we have to start somewhere. My point is, your comments about the U.S. healthcare system, I'm not strongly disagreeing with them, Rick, but we have to make some changes. It's not doing for my patients, particularly the people I see in the free clinics. It's not working for them. It really isn't.
Well, I mean, and do we really think that, A, there'll be enough, and you know, I kind of tend to focus on tort reform and some of the requirements that we have to do as healthcare, you know, facilities and healthcare leaders and everything. But are we ever going to relax the safety standards of a hospital? We're probably never going to be able to do that. Are we going to be able to
roll back?
Are we ever going to be able to say, you know, we really don't need to put fire extinguishers or you know, smoke, you know, or what do you call it? Fire prevention systems, you know, sprinklers. And I mean, are we ever going to say that? No, we're never going to say. Are we ever going to say we got to do away with all the ADA ramps? We don't need them. We're never going to do that. So we're in a really tough spot. We've got a lot of money to do some of the bait. We add a cost to everything just in the fact that we do it, what I would say, safer and better. And maybe the outcome isn't necessarily safer, but we try to be.
We need some really creative younger folks to come up with better systems for those. That would be cheaper and allow us to focus on the patient.
I'm going with chatbots.
Chatbots. That's your solution.
Chatbots are the answer. If you got somebody who will
you don't
talk
even
your
know
way,
what one of those is.
I will bring
you
an article.
You certainly never
well, wait,
used
you know, this
one.
This is great. This is like
you've
to
never
be continued.
Used one.
This is like a we're having a serial. What we'll do is I'll bring in an article next show about chatbots because I've got one sitting on my desk about how they're going to revolutionize medicine.
I want your personal experience on how you've used one.
A chatbot?
Yeah. Anywhere.
I'll let the chatbot
tell you. Any
kind. I don't really need to loose.
It's all right. That'll be my next question next week is, Tony, when have you ever used a chatbot?
Okay.
And what's your favorite chatbot? That'll be for next week. Okay. Don't give it up. But if you're so big on chatbots, I'm going to quiz you on them because I know a little about them.
To be continued.
To be continued. Meanwhile, Rick is going to, in his inimitable way, get Health Matters off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producers, Shamari Mosley, and Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or visit us on Facebook, just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and remember,
Health Matters is used with a proper diet, an exercise program, and possibly with other radio shows to control high blood sugar. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, weakness, or a metallic taste in the mouth may occur. If any of these effects persist or worsen, tell your doctor or pharmacist promptly.
Health Matters can rarely cause a serious, sometimes fatal condition called lactic acidosis. Stop listening to Health Matters and get medical help right away if you develop any of the following symptoms of lactic acidosis: unusual tiredness, dizziness, severe drowsiness, chills, cold skin, muscle pain, slow heartbeat, or stomach pain with nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea.
Read the patient information leaflet, if available from your pharmacist, before you start listening to our show, and each time there is a break. If you have any questions, consult your doctor or pharmacist.
Tell your doctor immediately if any of these conditions occur or if you notice a big change in your overall health. You may need to stop listening to our show temporarily. The elderly are also at higher risk, especially those older than 80 years who have not had kidney tests.
Health Matters does not usually cause low blood sugar. However, low blood sugar may occur if our show is prescribed with other anti-diabetic radio shows.
Whatever you do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of clinical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.